Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by you guys. I told you guys yesterday at the end of the show that we had so many questions that I was going to reopen the mailbag as the week goes along to try to get to all of them. I still have quite a few to get to, so let's just dive right in. First question here comes from Money Mike H. What's up, my man? So both you and Pete have mentioned y'all have coached kids, if I'm not mistaken. So my question here is, whose team would have won, your kids or Pete's kids? Side note, my guess would be your kids, because I'm sure you showed them your sick Euro stumble and how to dunk on giraffes. So I believe Pete coached a high school boys team. I coached a high school girls team. So I don't really know how we would do the matchup there. But look, when it comes to basketball knowledge and stuff like that, Pete is better at that than I am. I will 100% cop to that. So even if we coached two versions of the exact same team, and he and I were just asked to coach against each other, he would probably coach circles around me from a strategic standpoint. I was more of a motivator and I utilize my people skills to be able to get the, I coach both girls and guys, and the guys team that I coached was a JV team. So like my JV team would probably not have beaten Pete's men's varsity team. I think he coached a men's varsity team, but anywho, I utilized personal skills and stuff, and I had enough strategy chops to get by or whatever, but that was definitely not my strong suit. Pete would probably coach circles around me in that respect. My job on this show is to come up with topics that you guys might be interested in listening to, and I brought Pete onto the show because he is good at the X's and O's and the intricacies of the game. So I kind of saw that there was a hole in my abilities in analyzing this game, and saw that Pete was really, really good at it. We were able to come to an agreement on working together moving forward, and I think the show has really benefited as a result. So, yeah, to answer the question, I think Pete probably outcoaches me. But if he and I were working together, I think we'd have a really strong coaching staff. I really do. Next question comes from Jarrett Imamura. Basically, longer form. I saw your question, Jarrett, and you had asked for Pete's input on this as well. And I was waiting for a day for Pete to come on, and it must have just fallen through the cracks. So I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to your question, but the question itself is what my favorite analytic categories are, or what my favorite analytics are. PIPM is used, box plus minus is used in here as well. I'm not really fond of the kind of catch-all analytics, because I think there's a lot of context lost in terms of the situations that players produce for those catch-all stats. So when it comes to analytical kind of documentation of the basketball that I'm watching, what I usually do is I rely heavily on what I see out there. I'll try to find a trend. I basically kind of group games into, albeit arbitrary, groupings of games, and from the data that I have seen to that point, from the number of games that I had seen to that point, I try to note as many trends as I possibly can. And if I note a trend and it feels consistent enough over a large enough sample size, I'll go and see whether or not the math backs up the stuff that my eyes are seeing. And if it does back it up, then that's a trend that I have no problem talking to you guys about. If it is detracted, if the math actually flies in the face of this trend that I think I've noticed, I try to figure out why that might be going on, either from the analytical standpoint or from the am I watching the game wrong? Is a bias you know, creeping into what should be an objective observation of the team that I'm analyzing here. And more often than not, the data or the math backs up the stuff that I notice out there. This isn't rocket science what we're doing when I talk about aspects of the game that I like or don't like with the Lakers. And you know, generally speaking, too, when it comes to the analysis that I offer to you guys, it's not just, hey, the Lakers played tonight. Let's react just to that game, right? You guys wouldn't want straight recaps of games. If it's a big enough game, yeah, maybe I'll lean more heavily on the game. But in terms of what makes for more entertaining audio, I prefer to talk to you guys about, you know, larger scale trends that I note over the course of however many games the Lakers had played to or have played to that given point. So it's a good question. I'll try to remember to run it by Pete to see if he has any favorites as well. But, you know, generally speaking, I think there's a place for the catch-all, the catch-all analytics that you're talking about here. I think they can kind of start a conversation, but what I don't like seeing is, you know, without context, is Bradley Beal actually more efficient than Kobe was, right? Or you know, find a player that has, you know, is Pascal Siakam actually more important to what Toronto was doing last year than Kawhi? Could he replace that? You know, like, and not to say that those kinds of points are made regularly enough. And if they are made regularly enough, the person who makes them get ignored, right? So it's a bit of a straw man there for me to bring that up. But I think with some of these, you know, those specific types of stats, it's just you're better off if you're going to use them. You really have to study hard the context under which the production takes place, because without proper context, it's just numbers at that point. And really, that's not the kind of it's too baseball-y, right, to define basketball greatness by just that. It's actually kind of one of the things that I think has really hurt baseball is how easy it is now to mathematically describe what goes on out there on a baseball field. Let's take another quick second. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'll keep answering your questions. All right, the next question here comes from Sporadic. How goes it, Anthony? Love the show. Thank you. Kind of a random question. If Iggy is traded away from Memphis or bought out and signed by another team, would retrying with Michael Beasley seem like a viable option on this team? I think his defense is a little underrated, at least from what he showed in the few opportunities he got with us last year, and he's a walking bucket on offense. Definitely not to be used as a small ball five. Plus, I think he got a really bad hand dealt with his mom passing away during the season last year. That's an incredibly hard tragedy to deal with. So I can't blame him too much on bumping heads with Luke. That will take your head out of everything you got going on. Anyways, thanks for providing consistent content on the purple and gold. So I'm not going to take away from what Michael Beasley dealt with last year. I think losing your mom, I am personally a mama's boy, so, you know, whenever that day comes, I'm going to be a wreck, and I probably won't want to be somebody that, you know, say teammates would want around for a little while as I deal with that. That said, you know, I don't know when those problems started, but it wasn't like he was a consistently positive presence in the locker room before all of that went down. Now, again, I don't know for sure, you know, when a sickness kind of took hold of her or whatever. And the other thing too with Beasley is you're adding a player at a position that the Lakers are already kind of stacked at, right? Arguably, depending on how you feel about Kuzma and Danny Green, like three out of the top four players on the Lakers roster are all best at power forward. And as you point out yourself, the Michael Beasley was better, or you can't really play a small ball five, right? The one of the more hilarious quotes that we heard after the season, or one of the weird reports that we got after the year, was that Rob Pelinka thought that, and Magic Johnson thought that Michael Beasley could somehow replace Julius Randle, which is just effing laughable. He could not do that. And as a result, like he plays a spot that the Lakers don't really need somebody at. The reason Iggy makes a lot of sense is because right now, as it stands, Kyle Kuzma is the only natural small forward on the roster. And if you add an Andre Iguodala, that means that you now have two of those. And really, right now, the Lakers don't have any because Kuzma is hurt, right? So, LeBron will play the small forward, but he's best at the four. And other than that, unless you want to slide Danny Green down to the three and make him undersized at that position, the Lakers don't really have many options there. So, it's too bad Cephalosha got swept up. And it looks like Iggy is going to be stuck in Memphis for a while. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Lakers handle the hole in their roster at that spot. And it's a very important spot in the roster. Next question here comes from Austin. I think it says Lynn. Hi, Anthony and/or Pete. Love the show. Question for you guys. As much of a homer that I am, I agree with a lot of pundits saying that in terms of pure talent and fit, the Clippers probably have a better supporting cast than the Lakers. However, part of this is because while a lot of the role players on our team have a high ceiling in how they might perform, a lot of them have extremely low floors. So basically compare the two teams. Well, that's really what it comes down to, is that the Clippers have a lot more players throughout their roster that we have seen more recently help a good team, help a team win basketball games. The Lakers have a lot of guys who could help a basketball team win basketball games. I sound like a football analysis. In the National Football League, you have a lot of guys on the Lakers roster who could theoretically help, but we haven't really seen that in terms of just raw production over the last few years, right? Avery Bradley comes to mind. He hasn't been very good. And even when he was healthy, some of those numbers, you know, were kind of weird, in that they said the defenses, for example, were better when he was not on the court. KCP was great at the end of last year, but the games didn't matter. Rajon Rondo has the whole playoff Rondo thing and primetime Rondo thing, but on a day-to-day basis, he's a terrible point guard. And you can kind of go down the line here. JaVale McGee played really well. He got pneumonia, but how close to the pre-pneumonia JaVale McGee are the Lakers going to get? Dwight Howard is coming off of an injury-ridden season as well, riddled season as well, but the season before that, he was fine. And yet the team that he was fine with couldn't have been happier to get him out of there. So, you know, how are all of these pieces going to, where on the spectrum of their floor and ceiling are they going to land? We don't know. And, you know, what it means is when you have one player get closer to their floor, that means you have to have another player wind up finishing the season closer to their ceiling. And the more players that you have closer to your ceiling, obviously the better the Lakers are going to be in. And when people are analyzing the Clippers supporting cast compared to the Lakers, you are still going to be, you know, their floors are higher just because we have seen them perform at a higher level more recently than the guys that you're talking about with the Lakers. Let's go one more question here. Question for Pete and Anthony from Pineapple on Pizza. Pineapple on Pizza is awesome, writes, how do you think the team would have or should have been built if Lonzo was still on the team with AB, AD, and Braun, and BI was still on the team with AD and Braun? Keep up the great work. Well, with Lonzo, you are taken care of really defensively. You know, you have Lonzo Ball and Anthony Davis on a basketball court together, especially if you have, you know, JaVale or Dwight back there, and that defense is going to be really solid. But if you have Lonzo there alongside, especially JaVale or Dwight in that starting group, well, now you really have to have a knockdown shooter. So if the Lakers could have had Lonzo and Danny Green, you know, to go, you know, to basically pair a similar roster around, I think it really would have worked. Ingram is a lot more complicated because while Ingram played phenomenally well before the blood clot issue, the question with him is always going to be, can you design an offense around him and get the most out of him on a team that wins regularly enough in the NBA in 2019? The types of possessions that he dominates are not the kinds of possessions you want your basketball team to have a bunch of, given the way basketball is played in the NBA nowadays. And you know, if Ingram was a little bit more open to catching and shooting than he showed last year, then maybe there's a case you can be that you can make, and maybe he functions as another plus defender out there next to LeBron and Anthony Davis and Dwight Howard or whatever. But again, just like with Lonzo, if you have Ingram out there, that means that other, that, you know, fourth or fifth players, they both have to be just absolute knockdown terrors from 3-point range to be able to give everybody else enough room to operate in the ways that you want to be able to operate with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. So it's interesting. I think the team with Lonzo on it would be better than the team with Ingram on it. I think Ingram might be a more all-around talented player than Lonzo Ball, but I think Lonzo is a little easier to insert into a really good team in 2019. I'm really interested to see how both those guys look this year, though. I really am. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to finish up answering as many of these questions as I can possibly get to. All right. Chai Guy 1218 writes, "Hi guys, new Lakers fan here. LeBron stan, don't judge me. I wanted to start off by saying Anthony is underappreciated. He was the one who got me into the world of Lakers podcasts, i.e. LFR, Silver Screen and Roll, etc. I, for one, find his humor hilarious and hate when people are too critical or too optimistic on things, and Anthony has a good balance in my opinion. Thanks, Mom. You guys work really well together, and even when it's just Anthony, the podcast is a great listen. My question is, if you haven't answered already, how do you think the Lakers offseason shakes out if they luck out in the draft lottery and get the number one pick?" Ooh, that's a fun one. I think they probably still trade it for Davis, but that likely means that they would have been able to keep just about everybody around the rest of the roster. That said, I think part of the reason why New Orleans was a little bit more open to trading Anthony Davis to the Lakers was because they were getting Zion, and that kind of a thing is easier to do when you have that already in your bank. So I think you probably could have gotten away with trading Zion and maybe just Zion and either Ingram or Lonzo for Davis there. And now you still got to figure out ways for the roster to look around it. But I wonder if the Lakers would have ever thought of just keeping Zion. That's a fun hypothetical to roll through. I'm interested to see what you guys think on that. I think I still trade for Davis just because you're on a LeBron schedule now. But that's a really fun one. If you could have paired Zion and, you know, say you move Lonzo and Ingram and whomever else in a different trade to get somebody who fits alongside Zion and LeBron, that would have been really fun. But either way, you know, I'm perfectly happy with how that aspect of the offseason finished up. Let's go. This next question, I can't read your name out loud here. You guys try to catch me on these all the time. You got me once, and I'm not going to say which name it was that I read out loud, but I can't read some of your guys' names here out loud. Hey, love the show. I work as a cook in Cape May, New Jersey, in a deli, and Frank Vogel's dad is a regular there. That's awesome. He's a pretty cool dude and it makes me really hope things work out for his son in L.A. What is your honest opinion of Vogel's ceiling as a coach? This is going to sound really harsh, and I feel even worse for some reason thinking that, like, Vogel's dad is listening right now, but Vogel is just about the definition of mediocrity in coaching in the NBA. He might be slightly above average, but it's not by some incredible length. He's better than Luke Walton, so at least in that respect, I think the Lakers have an upgrade this year compared to last year. But while I'm also rooting for him to make things work with the Lakers, I just think that he's just up against so much in such a no-win situation for him. The guy who LeBron seems to want as the head coach is right behind him there holding the knife already in Jason Kidd. He isn't the guy that LeBron wanted in the first place. LeBron wanted Ty Lue. And, you know, while he had to take this opportunity when it was presented to him, he's in this lose-lose spot that I really feel bad for, kind of. As bad as you can feel for somebody who gets paid millions of dollars to coach the Lakers. Let's go a couple more questions here. Motor Breath writes, "Hey, Anthony and Pete, thanks for getting us through the long summer. And Anthony, apologize for my last critical review about your negativity. Oh, I do appreciate you or that you are not state-run media and take a nuanced approach to covering the team. Just curious how you guys feel about some of the other Lakers or NBA-centric pods out there. Lakers, Lady, big, I don't know any of these other ones. My big secret is that I don't really take in much sports coverage. I really love the Levitard show because while it is kind of, you know, tech by definition, it's a sports podcast. It's more just a bunch of people acting like idiots and entertaining me for a little while. I also listen to way fewer podcasts now than I did, you know, before I started doing this because I don't have any long drives anymore. So, you know, most of the time I spend in my house, I'm either working on this thing or working on my writing and stuff. And I can't write and have a podcast on in the background. I need some kind of music. So it's something that I've thought about changing. But, you know, generally speaking, I talk about the Lakers every single day, either on the show or you know, when I get together with friends and family, they want to hear about what's going on with the Lakers too. So I talk about the Lakers so much that I just don't really want any more of my life to involve them if it doesn't have to. But I'm sure there are other great shows out there. Next question here comes from Gabby Sheen. "Love the show. Been a Lakers fan since 2000. I listen to you guys every day. Thank you. Quick question. I'm from Puerto Rico, but now living in Maryland. I have never gone to a Lakers game or any NBA game. Do you think it's worth it to see the Lakers against the Wizards? It's the closest NBA team. The game is at the end of the regular season. I'm afraid they're going to bench LeBron and AD, assuming we are comfortably in the playoffs, and I'll be paying just to see the bench playing. What do you guys think?" For one thing, you're really confident, that's for sure, that the Lakers are going to be so comfortably in the playoffs. I don't think anybody is going to be that comfortably in the playoffs that they'll be able to rest people at the end of the year. So in that respect, I think it's worth it to still go see the game, depending obviously on your budget and what it costs to go to a game out there. Look, LeBron has, you know, maybe 3 years optimistically of being the dude LeBron, you know, and even that long. Anthony Davis is entering his absolute prime. So the chance of seeing those guys play is, and you know, it's kind of a bucket list thing. Like, I was always bummed. I remain really bummed that I was never able to go see Michael Jordan play, or I never went to a golf tournament, watched Tiger Woods play when he was in his prime, you know? So just personally for me, if you have the opportunity to go see LeBron before it's all over, I would probably advise you go do that. Let's go another couple questions here. LA24825 writes, "Hey Anthony, I want to hear your reaction to what it would be if Andre Iguodala gets bought out by the Grizzlies and the Lakers cut someone like Troy Daniels instead of DeMarcus Cousins with everything else going on. I personally am not thrilled if something like that happens. Thanks and curious to see your reaction. And also to lighten the mood, which Lakers jerseys do you prefer? The new ones that have a little drop shadow or the ones we had from 2000 to 2018? I really like these style of uniforms. The idea of, kind of a modern retro look. I just don't like the banana yellow that they're using, the highlighter yellow. I don't understand why they went that route. So that's kind of too bad. I also thought that the purple uniforms from last year got a little too, they got lumped in with some of the other poor uniform choices that the Lakers made. I thought that was too bad, but and generally speaking, the Lakers don't wear their purple uniforms nearly enough. Look, purple is highest of keys, the best color in all of sports. It just looks cool out there for the teams that can pull it off, and obviously the Lakers are one of the teams that can pull it off and should pull it off way more often. In terms of the first question here, if the Lakers, now we got to see what happens with the investigation that apparently per Rob Pelinka is still going on. We got to see how that thing turns out. But if the Lakers cut somebody who could really actually help the team this year just to keep DeMarcus Cousins on the team when he won't help the team this year, that's not a great look just in terms of asset management. And then, if we get the outcome of this investigation and it turns out it was his voice on the phone and this was a part of some kind of a cycle of behavior with him, then yeah, get him the hell off the team. And if they don't get him the hell off the team and instead cut a player who they could really use this year. And Troy Daniels is, according to Jared Dudley, the best shooter on the team. Now, Danny Green exists, so I kind of disagree there. But still, it's just you could use him potentially in ways that you can't use Cousins. And it would be a bummer to see that go down. If politics have that crazy a hold over the organization, the Lakers are going to be fighting an uphill battle and already just insanely difficult Western Conference and NBA at large. All right, last question here comes from Kobe James 234. Great pod. Screw what everybody else has to say. I listen to pods all day and I love the perspective you speak from. No, there's some criticisms that are valid. It's definite, and you know what you are getting when you're coming on. What's the best trade realistically the Lakers can make this season to improve their current roster? Trades are going to be really difficult this year. They aren't really able to trade draft picks because of the Stepien rule and the number of picks they sent to New Orleans for Davis. They don't have, unless some team is just insanely high on Talen Horton Tucker. I'm blanking on his name. But unless they're just way high on him, then, they don't really have young trade pieces that teams that are rebuilding might be interested in. Kyle Kuzma is hurt right now and has had an up and down career to this point, so you don't know what his trade value is. And then, the contracts that the Lakers signed this year that might be able to be used in, say, December, well, all of those are rotation players for the most part. So, and if they're going to be able to be traded, either you're trading away an important part of your rotation because they played well, or you're trading somebody at a lowered value because they haven't played well and they fell out of the rotation. So I don't really know what trades the Lakers get. Usually this is one of my favorite things to kind of look at, but they don't have very many options here to improve the roster in that way. And that's why the buyout market is going to be so pivotal when that, market starts popping up. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I still have a few questions here to get to, and I do want to bring up a couple of those with Pete. So maybe at the end of tomorrow's show or a couple days from now, we're actually kind of switching up the schedule this week because of his travel schedule. But for now, Have a great rest of your day. Enjoy the basketball. The Rockets actually played a game tonight. That was kind of fun. As fun as Rockets basketball can be. But enjoy the rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.